Well, hello, and welcome to everybody, and thank you so much for having me. This is the first time I've ever done a career services talk, and I was thinking about what I was going to talk to you guys about. The most important thing for me about this talk is actually, hey, welcome, is you guys. I really want this to be about you all and the questions that you have and everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to talk a little bit about my career. I'm going to talk a little bit about the entertainment industry right now, which is a kind of a challenging topic, and you'll learn why in a second, because it's really evolving and changing as we speak. But I really want to have at least a good 30 minutes for you all to be asking questions, maybe more, you know, type of thing. So I really want this to be formed around you. And you know, anything I can provide in terms of insight or answers or what have you. So as Christy said, pretty much right when I graduated from Swarthmore in 87, I went out to LA. And I'm from here. I'm from the area, so that was a big change. But I went out specifically to get into the entertainment industry for. I don't know, about a minute, there was a chance that I could have gotten a job in New York at DDB Needham in advertising, and that would have changed my life for sure. But I think it was all, I think for me, I was interested in telling stories and what went on in entertainment the summer before my senior year when I went out to Los Angeles to work that summer. I just had some extra money and had a connection out there and went out and basically temped and got a feel for the city and everything. And at that point, I thought, wow, this is a pretty cool place. I also liked the city a lot, too. I mean, I'm from Marion, and I grew up on the main line, so the weather and all that was really helpful. And, you know, this has been quite something in the last 2 days. I thought you guys got rid of cold weather here, you know? So I started in the industry, I started in the entertainment industry the way that people used to typically do. I mean, they still do it, but so some of this is going to be a little bit dated and challenging, but I started in the mailroom. So I went with my brand new shiny Swarthmore degree and became a messenger. Nice. Yeah. Great way, though. I tell you something. I learned some lessons as a messenger that have stuck with me to this day. So what I would do is I worked for a production company that made films. It was a company called Kings Road Entertainment, and they made films such as the Big Easy and Slapshot and All of Me. And at that time, they were making things like Jackknife and... I think they made the Big Easy around that time, too. And so my job was to basically take scripts and deliver them all around kind of the Los Angeles area. And it was great because it helped me get to know L.A. and it helped me get to know the topography. But I remember I used to go onto studio lots and everything. And I would just go and I would deliver my package like a good person and come back and everything. And I remember one of the guys that was in the mailroom said to me, he's like, have you ever been into a soundstage? You know what a soundstage is? It's like that big kind of cavernous thing where they shoot things. And I said, no. I said, you know, the door says very clearly, absolutely, positively, no admittance whatsoever, you know. And he looked at me and he's like, so when the light turns yellow, do you stop? And I'm like, no. And he's like, okay. So, I got up my courage and went on to a lot and opened up that big imposing door. And sure enough, I didn't disappear. You know, I didn't get thrown in jail or whatever. And that was a really great lesson for me in terms of not just the entertainment industry, but in terms of life, actually, which was the idea that sometimes, you know, when a door says absolutely positively no admittance whatsoever, that's actually the door I should be going through, you know. And so anyway, I was a messenger, and then I became an assistant to the head of the producer, who was the head of the company, and I really learned the film industry at his side. And one of the things that I learned about the entertainment industry is that really there's, and it's still true today, there's really two sides to it. There's people, most of the entertainment industry is a lot of people who take the core kind of things that are created by a very few people and they sell them and they distribute them. And so I sort of looked at it and said, well, okay, if I'm going to be an executive in the entertainment industry, what's the difference between doing that and, frankly, being in the shoe business? And the answer is there isn't a whole lot. And so I thought, okay, why did I come out here? Well, I came out here really to create things. You know, I came out here to really create something. And at the time, the closest thing for me was writing, screenwriting. I guess not surprising coming from Swarthmore. So I took a job in, we had, at the time, there was an executive search firm, a recruiting firm that was helping out the company I was at, and they had an entertainment division. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go and work with them I can still stay in the business, but I can have time to write on the side, because working for a producer takes up all your time, and yet there's like literally no time to do anything. So I went and did that, and you know, pretty much my career has followed that path the whole time. I've either spent time, you know, kind of doing entertainment recruiting, or you know, doing consulting in terms of recruiting, or I've spent time honing my craft. And I spent a long time writing a lot of scripts. I wrote a lot of television, and then I wrote a lot of film stuff. But it really wasn't, and I tried to combine the two by working in programming at a cable network, and found out that, you know, it really wasn't combining the two. You're really just an executive, like I sort of always suspected, it would be. So it wasn't until 2004, about 8 years ago, that I directed a short film for the, there's a directing competition on HBO called Project Greenlight, and that was created by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and I directed a short, and that went a couple of rounds. But more importantly, it was this huge eye-opening experience for me, because I thought, you know, that really felt right. That, you know, I never thought of myself as a director. You know, I always thought, okay, and I studied writing, and I wrote, banged my head against the wall, and it's really hard to, you know, kind of hone your craft. But when I directed, you know, that really spoke to all the skills that I like, which is I really like working with people. I really like getting a lot of people around a project and kind of listening to what that piece is really about and really serving that. You know, serving the heart of that piece. And then I thought back and I thought, you know, I have made other things before. Like I remember making a video for my grandparents for their 50th wedding anniversary, and that went well. So it's just one of those things where I stumbled on it, and it was like really clear that that was like, oh, okay, this is it for me, you know. And pretty much ever since, anytime I've kind of focused on directing versus I still get sucked into writing, and that's really, really important. Things have just sort of gone well. I ended up directing a documentary about the Iroquois, Confederacy, and the sport of lacrosse. The Iroquois created the sport of lacrosse, they play it ceremonially. The Iroquois are six nations in upstate New York and Canada, and The sport that you see today is the long stick lacrosse they created, and they play ceremonially as part of their religion, but they also play it competitively, and they also travel on their own passports, which most people don't know. And every 4 years, they play in the World Lacrosse Championships as a sovereign nation. It's them and 23 other teams, and they're the fourth best team in the world. And they're drawing upon this type of player pool. So I thought, this was in 2005 that I stumbled across it, because I played lacrosse here. Lacrosse was one of my first movie ideas, and I was doing research to revise that script, and I came across this. I met with them in upstate New York, and I learned all this, and I thought, well, somebody should be documenting them in the World Games. And so I did that. I made a proposal, and they accepted it, and I went, and I made a film called Iroquois Rising about them in the 2006 World Championships. And so from there, I got involved in television, and I spent time, based on, kind of my experience there in that piece, I actually met somebody, I think, through a Swarthmore gathering in L.A., who was executive producing a show called The Unit on CBS. And I went there and spent time really as a director observer, and that was really transformative for me in terms of this, because for a director, if you're just interested in directing, television is phenomenal. Right now, that's where all the money is being spent, is in TV, making TV programs. Things are changing now with the web and online stuff, but I spent time really as an observer and meeting and learning from the best directors in television, and I was able to do that for a couple of seasons on The Unit, a little bit on a show called Lie to Me on Fox, and then even Good Luck Charlie in their second season. They're now in their fourth season. That's Half Hour. I was able to spend some time there. And then last year, I ended up going to a conference in Africa of a worldwide gathering of Quakers that was a once-in-a-generation gathering of all these different Quakers from around the world. For those of you who don't know, Quakers are members of the Religious Society of Friends, come in all shapes and sizes. The folks that founded this place were liberal unprogrammed friends, and that accounts for about this section of the Quaker spectrum. It goes from there all the way to evangelical friends, and the majority of Quakers are in Africa, actually in Kenya. And so this conference was being held. It was the first time all of them had gotten together since 1967 in Kenya. And me and my wife, along with a couple of other people, were selected to, I'm a Quaker, were selected to represent Pacific Yearly Meeting, which is one of the many yearly meetings that were going. And so naturally, one of the ways I was thinking about bringing the experience back to the folks who funded us was to make a film about it. And I talked to the other four folks who were going. They were really into it as well. It turns out one of the other people that the PYM selected was also an artist and a documentary filmmaker. So, secret what they wanted us to do, you know what I mean? That they had a deeper wisdom there in selecting us, you know? I think we'll select two filmmakers, a former journalist, and somebody who's into music. I don't know what they're going to bring back, you know? But they never say anything to us, you know? They we're selecting you guys, you know? So we decided we were going to make a film about it, and we decided to do it as a professional project, developing a proposal and everything. And so when we started talking to people about the fact that we were doing it, we learned that, there's a lot of people who were really interested in seeing it, because a lot of people who couldn't go to this thing. And we reached out to the organization doing the conference, and they, because we wanted to coordinate with them, we were going to be shooting, they said, well, this is a great idea. No, we're not doing anything, and we're delighted you're doing this. So we ended up doing it for everyone. And we ended up raising money for it separately, and you can see it, by the way, if you're interested in this sort of thing. It's up online. So it's called Salt and Light. So And then I have a TV project, which I reached out and to the author of a book called What No One Tells the Bride, that I've developed, and that we're out there, that's received some interest. We're talking to networks about it and that type of thing. So anyway, it's just a long way of saying that, and all along I've sort of kept the kind of recruiting consulting going, because these days it's... Even for the professionals in the industry, it's hard to make a living. The professionals, if you're on the creative side, if you're on the business side, that's different. But if you're on the creative side, it's project by project oriented. Even though you may not think of yourselves that way, you're running a business. You're running the business of you, as a writer, as a director, as a producer, whatever the case may be. So So that brings me to here, and you know, one of the reason that I'm here actually is I'm talking to Swarthmore about doing a documentary in honor of the sesquicentennial celebration next year. And so one of the things we're doing is you know, we're looking to involve students in it, you know, either on the filmmaking side or on the sound or on the music side, actually. So that kind of brings us up today in terms of me and my career. And then I guess I wanted to talk a little bit. Is that helpful? Is that confusing, or does that make sense to folks generally? And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was the entertainment industry, and then I promise I'll stop talking. So I feel like I've just been talking way too much. The entertainment industry is in a really, really weird state right now. When I graduated back in the late 80s, things still worked pretty traditionally the way that it did, which was, and if you're from the entertainment industry in Hollywood or LA, you'll know all this, but you go out there, you get a job as an assistant, you learn the business, you know, if you want to write, direct, or tell stories, you could go to film school, which is fine. The barriers to making things were quite high, and you know, you know, you were able to do it, but you just, you know, you kind of patch things together. These days, it's just a lot more kind of amorphous and out there. I just came, actually, the first 3 days of this week, I was down in Miami at the television conference for the television broadcast networks and distributors called NATPE, the National Association of Television Programming Executives Gather. And the broadcast television networks, NBC, CBS, Fox, and the theaters, the film companies, are in a really weird state right now because there's, with technology and with everybody watching, you know, everything on all kinds of different devices and everything, they used to be able to count on people going at, like, the broadcast, people would count on people like going and sitting in front of the TV at a certain time to watch something. The film people would count on people being able to go to the theaters and sit in there and watch something. And the audience is left, and it's left them behind. And you know, what their typical ways of setting up their business are, it's not that they're not working, but they're just seeing it go down, you know? Meanwhile, there's tons of opportunity on the digital side. You know, there's tons of opportunity. At this television conference, probably the biggest presenter there was YouTube, you know? And YouTube is just created this wonderful kind of forum for folks to, you know, create their own content and create their own networks and channels. I mean, and this really is the future, you know? So whereas typically some things from the past still hold. I mean, you can still go out to Los Angeles and get a job in the mailroom of one of the talent agencies if you want to be an executive, or you can go out and get a job. I do recommend in going out and getting a job as an assistant, or you can go to film school, you know, and what have you. But it really requires creativity in terms of your career. It really requires adaptability. You know, you've got all things going. You've got the opportunities out there, and you've got, you know, sort of how do you translate what you want to do into actual work, you know? That, by the way, is the biggest challenge if you're on the creative side. But the other part is, what is it that works for you? You know what I mean? I mean, it took me a long time. It took me, 20 years to figure out that I wanted to direct, you know? By the way, this isn't unique for Swarthmore graduates. I find like a lot of graduates are always like reinventing themselves or whatever. So it's a constant seeking process. But the question is, what is that kind of whisper behind you that isn't the thing that's in front of you that you think, you know, yeah, I want to be a writer, but really the thing that's behind you saying, what is it that's right for you? And then how does that connect up with the opportunities out there and what's out there? And so I'm just going to stop talking right now, and I really want to turn it over to you guys and spend as much or all the rest of the time we have with questions. And now's the time to leave no stone unturned. I'll do everything I can. So is that helpful, by the way? Yeah. I'm going to sit. Yes.
How does a writer get his work out there? His or her work?
What kind of a writer?
Let's say film. Let's say it's a script for an hour and a half movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many ways. I mean, there's right now, there are more film festivals than I could even imagine, you know, out there, that a lot of which take screenplay submissions. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of contests out there. But really, the top screenwriters of today are the ones saying, you know, this was the challenging thing for me giving this talk, because things are moving. But basically, the message that everybody's saying is, you can't think of yourself as just a writer, you know? You have to think of yourself as somebody who, okay, maybe that's what you like to do, but you got to get it made. You can make it now. You know what I mean? Even in the most rudimentary fashion, I don't care what script you have, you could go shoot it on a stage, you know? And so one of the suggestions these days, I'm talking about from the top writers on down, is just make your movie. You know, even if it's the bad version of your movie, you could tell if the story works.
Right.
You know, I mean, in the end, there's this one myth, I think, that kind of goes around, that, like, there's a lot of undiscovered talent in Hollywood. You know, there's like, oh, there's a lot of great scripts that just aren't getting made. And it's not true. It's not true. If it's a great script, people will, like, they'll put their neck on the line for it, you know? I'm not sure if you're here for the business side or the creative side, and I'm really interested to know what it is. And maybe we can ask that soon. But if you're here on the creative side, the thing I would tell you that's the hardest thing isn't connections, you know? It's learning how to tell great stories, you know? It's learning the craft of telling stories. I mean, the most incredible experience I had was when I went into the writer's room of the unit. And I did go, and I was able to sit in the writer's room of the unit. And if you're a writer and you want to be a professional writer, that's what I would say do right out of school. Go be an assistant to other writers, you know? It's the best thing you can do. Because that was it. That, like, the whole mission, like, here I'm trying to reinvent the wheel, and I sophomore degree, and I'm like, oh, I want to change the world and, you know, create new stuff. And, you know, you sit in the writer's room and you see how they do it, you know? You see how they do it. I mean, they're just basically going, they're thinking about movies, you know? So the best thing you can do as a writer is watch as many movies as possible, you know what I mean? Because all they're doing is taking a movie and they're going, well, maybe we can take that structure and apply it to this show. You know, maybe we can create a story based on that structure, you know? Until you see pros doing that and how they do that, you know, it's you're kind of operating in a vacuum. But the answer to your question is write your script, get it out there any way you can, you know, and if it's great, it will get, you know, people will put their neck on the line. They will pass it up the chain, you know. And these days, access isn't the issue.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes?
So on the business side, do you find...
I want to ask people to introduce themselves. Sorry, just your name.
I'm Jake.
Hey, Jake, how are you?
Good.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, on the business side, do you find that there's any overlap between film and television these days, or because I've heard that you kind of have to pick a track and stick with it, but with kind of all the convergence that you're talking about, can you kind of shift your career between film and television, or do you kind of have to stick with one?
It's a good question. These days, things are getting blurrier. Because, as I'm sure you know, there's a lot of film people making TV. I mean, basically, so the film business is, I had this producer, I have a very successful film producer who's a producer on this TV show that I've got, right? And we're out there pitching it to the next works. And he's really excited because he's this independent producer who's been making films forever with a credit card, essentially. And he's looking at me, he's like, you know, this is a real business. You know, you go in, they make it, you know, and it happens. He's like, the film business, not a real business, you know, because you develop something for 10 years, and then maybe it gets made, you know. And that's what's happening now is there's no work in the film business for a lot of people. So they're going into TV because that's where, or now on digital, you know, online, whether it's Alloy Digital or My Damn Channel or Smosh or anything, you know, all this stuff. So the answer to your question is, right now, there's still a Chinese wall between the two, you know? But I don't know, I think that's going to come down, personally. Because before, if you're in the film business, there was a snobbery to being in TV, you know? If you're TV, you always wanted to be in film, you know, that type of thing. There are different relationships. The reason that they would have you pick different tracks is that there's different relationships. There's different people. So there's different people that are developing films, and they have different priorities, you know, and versus the people developing TV, and they have different cycles and that type of thing. So it's hard to have relationships with everyone, you know. But it's not impossible, you know. So I think as it goes forward, it's probably going to come down. You know, there's still a little bit of that, you know, kind of left over. So, does that answer your question? Yeah, helpful.
Yeah. I have another question. I'm Joshua, by the way.
Okay.
I have a question about overlap between creative and business. Like, if someone's like a creative person, are they on the business side as well? Like, do they have to be, or are they like just creative and they find people to do the business for them? Like, how much does it need to overlap?
Well, again, you know, my previous perceptions of this are all getting trashed, you know, as I kind of proceed in life. But it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, you know. If you have a great project, mm-hmm. Here's an example, like, to answer your question. I don't know if this is helpful, but so I've been going to these TV conferences and for a while now. I haven't gone to this one in a while, but I've gone previously. Anyway, I go there, and I'm talking about two different things. I'm talking about doing, I have this show, and I'm also talking about doing recruiting, right? So I might start the conversation by talking about recruiting, and people are like, oh, okay, you know, that's interesting. And then I mention, you know, that I'm actually a director, I'm making projects, and I have this show. And then they're like, oh, really? You know, they really want to talk to you. So, and I thought there would be some discrimination. People are like, wait a minute, he's a, you know, but no, there isn't. If you've got something good, you know, that's all that matters. Sometimes what people do is if they work in a business and they're worried that they might jeopardize their job or something, they might go out with a script and with a pen name, you know. But that just goes to show you how it doesn't matter, because if it sells, you know, then people always find out, oh, yeah, this was the VP of marketing over at Fox, you know. So, that type of thing. Yes?
With film and TV, I'm Sophia.
Hi.
And I was wondering if any of that crossed over into the theater world as well, and, like, going back and forth between that.
I think so. I mean, I believe personally. It's different relationships. There's different people in charge. There's different dynamics, you know, that are part of it. I know nothing about the theater world, by the way. But my sense of it is that, you know, if you have a piece of material and you create something that's better as a play, you know, or as a musical than it is as anything else, that will get attention. You know, you'll be able to go and do that. I know the actors do it all the time. You know, they go from one to the other to the other. I don't see why you can't. It's just it just ends up being a lot. You know, I mean, the challenge here, as you probably figure out, is if you've got a piece of material and you've got a project you want to make, the challenge here is just so much of the work is getting it out there. So much of the work is just doing the legwork, you know, to actually get it to all the festivals and all the possible producers in TV and all the possible producers in theater or whatever the case may be.
Do you think, like, as like a single writer, you could like tackle all like the different mediums?
Sure, why not? I mean, you know, good storytelling. You know, David. You know, somebody like David Mamet. You know, does that. You know, and others too. You know, Matt and Trey. Matt Parker and Trey Stone are they're gods. They're gods, man. You know, I mean, they're just doing incredibly well, and I know that on the creative side they're really well respected. On the business side, all the people on the business side could think of is just look at them and go, they're getting like $5 million a week for the Book of Mormon. You know, like why didn't I jump on that bandwagon?
I guess, well, not like the actual videos. I guess maybe like the networking, like around, although like the connections are not as difficult.
Say that again.
So like, well, not the actual medium of like writing it, but I guess like the crossover of like people.
Yeah. It's just more work. It's just more work for you. Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Lisa. You mentioned that you went to LA very much instead of going to New York.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are opportunities in New York, or do you think if you want to get into TV or film, you really should go to LA?
No, I can't speak to New York. I don't know New York well, although I do know that the opportunities are definitely there, you know. And it's interesting. I would love to hear somebody who has some, like a similar experience, but to hear them talk about New York and what they did in New York, because I don't quite know the dynamic, especially starting out, you know. And in L.A., I know that you know, the name of the game in the beginning is trying to be an assistant or trying to work in that area that you want to work in, you know. But I just don't know how it works in New York. I think it's smaller. You know, I mean, film and TV, my sense of it, because I spent a little bit of time on this, then helping out Brooklyn College. They're creating a new film school, by the way, a new public film school in Brooklyn College. So it's the first public graduate film school in New York. But my sense of it is just the community is small. You know, the people know each other a little bit more than in L.A. L.A. is a little bit more spread out.
So in regards to, like, honing your craft, would you recommend really like going to school, because you just mentioned going to film school, and would you recommend the same thing for like those who are writers and actors as well before like really getting into the business? Or
yeah, I knew this question was going to come up, and it's a really, really good question. One, I wish I had a really clear answer for you. I really can't say that I think there's advantages to both. You know. I think that these days, one of the things that's happening right now is that there is a proliferation of film schools. And this is connected to what I said earlier. If you notice, the reason for that is that, because remember I said you can't really make a living in the film business these days unless you're Jerry Bruckheimer or what have you, you know, all those independent producers, you know, there's no deals. So what are they doing? They're teaching. So there's a big migration now from the industry to, you know, to teaching. So I was dissuaded from film school by Spike Lee, because I read, I was, I mean, and he doesn't even know it, you know? But I read the journal that he wrote when he was making She's Gotta Have It, you know? Mm-hmm. And all I kept saying, and by the way, Spike Lee is now an artist in residence at NYU, you know, but all I kept saying in that journal was, like, I only went to film school for the equipment, you know, it taught me nothing, you know, type of thing. And so I thought, well, rather than spend all that money to go to film school, why don't I just, you know, focus that money on making a film? But Here's the advantages, I think, to going to film school. I think that if you go to film school, first of all, you get your advanced degree, and when you have an MFA, when you're making projects like I am, and you're out there and you're presenting yourself as a director or writer, what have you, it's part of your professional credentials. You know, people don't talk about this much, but you know, you need to think in terms of, okay, if I'm going to make stuff, how am I going to fund it? You know, and that's a whole proposal process. And I'm even talking to Swarthmore about this now, about this little documentary we're thinking about with this, about the college. And so I think that's helpful. I also think that the relationships that you make in film school are really great, you know, because you're making relationships in film school, and then everybody else is going out into the industry, and you're and then you kind of have that as a touchstone when you're out there, you know, and people can help other people, and people will succeed, and then they might be able to help you out. The downside of it is, there's a couple of downsides. One is that unless you're somebody who comes from a wealthy family, you're either somebody who can take on about $200,000 worth of debt, you know, or your family can afford $200,000. But think of it. In an industry where the employment is hard and it takes time, the worst thing you want to do is go out there with $200,000 in debt. You know? And because then you're almost assuring yourself to not really get a gig, or that you have to take something you don't want. You know? So that is a really hard dilemma, I think. If you're a doctor and you go into $200,000 worth of debt, you pretty much know you're going to get a job. You know? And but if you're in this industry, you know, it's kind of the reverse dynamic, I think. So that's the advantages of going to film school, and I guess the disadvantages to going to film school. So I ended up getting my film school out in the world and doing my thing, you know. But I always think about how would it have been if I went? Should I have gone? You know, that type of thing. But I don't know.
So, as a composer, how is it?
And your name is?
My name is Alejandro.
Hi.
As a composer, how does one get his big break other than by going to music film school? Like, if one is interested in writing music for TV or film or computer media?
Sure. Kind of the same answer sort of applies. I mean, I think there could be real advantages to going to film school and making those connections and relationships. And I also think that you could also spend that time as well creating music for other filmmakers, you know, while you're out there in the world. So. The key is just making things, you know, continuing to make things, and continuing to score films and compose films, all kinds, you know, documentary shorts, webisodes, everything, you know. I would argue that you're in the right function in the industry, if the industry is your thing, if you'll basically, you don't really care what you do, you just want to do it. Like, I'll direct anything, you know. I'm at a point where, you know, if somebody says, you know, I mean, I'm not so busy that I can't take on more. If somebody wants to fund a web series or whatever, I'm happy to direct. Tony Scott, you know, one of the most successful directors in the industry, you know, he would make films, and in between he would just make commercials, you know. I mean, if it's something that you want to do and love to do, just make it, you know, and keep making it. And so the big break is, that's another myth, the big break. let me talk, thank you for mentioning that. I really appreciate that, because, and I'm getting a lot of this, by the way, from Terry Rossio. And if you don't know who Terry Rossio is, he's a very successful screenwriter, and probably, I would argue, one of the top two or three in the industry. And he has this really great perspective on the big break. And basically, he says, you know, everybody thinks that once you do something, you know, everything is kind of a lot easier. And he's like, you know, it's actually not true. You know, in the end, you just have to keep creating, and in the end, you'll just be evaluated on the quality of your work. And, you know, yes, people will read Terry Rossio's stuff maybe quicker than they might read my stuff. But they're not going to pay him for it if it isn't great. You know, they're not going to get into business with him just to be in business with him, you know. And on the creative side, I really think that's true, you know. On the TV side, sometimes they take risks with people who they just want to be in business with, you know, and TV is very much of an execution medium on the writer-producer side. But generally speaking, unfortunately, I hate to dissuade, be the one to be the bearer of bad news, but the work never stops and just keeps getting harder, you know, as you go. So, hi.
Hi, I'm Meryl. I guess I had a couple of questions. One is about kind of the writer-director relationship, and if you think that, I guess, do people end up directing their own work writing? Do you need to have a relationship with the writer to, like you mentioned, I guess the two questions are kind of intertwined. Like, as a director, do you have, like, writers whose work you'd like, you prefer to direct, or writers who you end up working with a lot? And do you think that's necessary in order to get work directing somehow? I'm not sure why that's in my head, but it kind of is. And then secondly, you mentioned that you'll direct anything, which is awesome, but do you ever have to, like, sacrifice creative control or in order to work? And is that upsetting? I guess, obviously, it must be, but, like, how do you negotiate these things?
Yeah. Let me answer the second one first, and then I'll go back to the first. So on the directing side, one of the reasons I like to direct is I like to work with people, you know. And on the TV side, the TV directors don't have any power. I mean, they have some power, but they really don't have much power, you know. They're there to service the writer-producers, you know. I love that. I'm happy to do that. I mean, if it's, you know, there's some shows that I might have a problem supporting if I feel like really they're mean-spirited, you know, at the end of the day, or they're treating somebody, you know, in a way that I'm not comfortable with. But I don't have that problem. I haven't had that problem yet. But generally speaking, that's what you're doing. Is you're like somebody who has these talents to be able to work with actors. See, I love working with actors. You know, I love that creative process. You know. And I love the process of shooting, and I love the process of editing, and I'm putting it all together, you know. And in the TV world, you're at the service of the writer-producers. I think, and so I don't have any problems with that, personally. You know, you have some protections. In the DGA, you're able to, you know, you basically have the time to be able to do your cut, and then you give your cut over, and then they do with it what they will, you know? But, you know, I think it's a great opportunity because you're just directing, you can direct constantly. You can go from one episode to another. You're just constantly, you know, kind of on set making things, and you're making things, you know, in the world. So I don't get all caught up about that. If it's something that I'm writing or that I've developed or I've created, you know what I'm saying? That's when those issues of protection, you know, kind of come in. I think I'm going to segue to your second question, which is, for instance, I have this project I mentioned, which is a TV show called What No One Tells the Bride. And basically it's a show about, it's based on a book, and it's a show about the first year of marriage, you know, and how, the strong liberal woman ended up, you know, kind of going out with an experiment because she thought it could go nowhere with a conservative naval officer, and they fell in love and ended up getting married, you know. And so, of course, the first thing that she does when they get married is he's a macho guy, she tries to change him. Of course, that doesn't work, you know. And then she's got to decide, do I stay in this or do I leave? And then she ends up, you know, kind of swallowing gulp and deciding to embrace him for what he is and just, and then he does change, you know, because she doesn't try to change, right? So I developed this. I reached out to the writer of this book, Marg Stark, who I thought the writing in this book was really wonderful. I thought it was a book really about how to live life, you know? And it's just very deep wisdom in terms of being thrown into a situation where they don't really give you many rules. I mean, you hear about happily ever after, but you never really hear about marriage, you know? What's that about, right? So we created that together, okay? So now I feel very... So first of all, she's a great writer, and I love working with people who I think a great writer is probably somebody who's really good at accessing character and really good at accessing heart, and she's really good at that, you know what I mean? And I know story and structure, and I can add other stuff. So it's wonderful to be able to have that relationship. Because A, I like working with people, and B, I think she's really talented, you know what I mean? I am very protective about that material. You know, when we're going out there and talking to it and pitching it to people and whatever, you know, people might come up with ideas and what have you, and I'm like, okay, that's helpful if it makes it better. But because I created that with her, you know, yeah, I will be very protective about that because I'm protecting something that we, you know, created. But I don't know if that answers your question. I do like working with talented people. And generally, as a director, I would prefer to work with the most talented people in every category and just leave the basic directing things to me. Great. Yeah.
My secondary question is, do you think that if you want to be kind of in the role that you're talking about of like sort of a primary creator of like coming up with something new to be made rather than being plugged into a project? Because I notice a lot with TV shows that, you know, the writer, the head writer stays the same each week and the creator of the show is the same at the end of, you know, the credits each week. But there's a different director for Mad Men, like, every week.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So if you want to be, like, making, really, like, having a project that you make yourself or whatever, do you think you need to be a writer as well?
Yes. Well, I'll caveat that. Typically, yes, but Cheers, for instance, Cheers was created by Glenn Charles and Les Charles, who were writers, you know, on Taxi and the Mary Tyler Moore Show or whatever, but also James Burrows, who's a director. So the three of them got together and created Cheers, and that was a unique experience, you know. But the crafts are different. You know, writing is a different craft than directing. So I don't mean to say that it's just easy to go from one to another, because it's really not. They're totally different skills, you know. I feel like I'm a much more natural director than I am a writer. You know, as a writer, I am just battling all my worst instincts and all my, you know, that whole thing, you know. But maybe that's the answer to your question, is they're different crafts, and it's really important to recognize.
Hi, I'm Sanaz. Earlier you were talking about learning the writing process and how the story goes from the pros who really know how to do it. Where would you suggest specifically to go and get that experience?
I didn't hear you because he was walking out the door. Can you just do the last part of your question? Where would I suggest?
Specifically to go to get that kind of experience.
Of learning...
Like how to story tell.
Like on the web or
businesses or where they would accept people like who are in college or just graduating who want to know that.
And one learned storytelling in what medium? Like film, TV or not being writing novels or just plays or just in general or
probably film and TV.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think it's amazing. There's so much available on the web right now. I mean, just as a starting point, you know what I mean? In terms of storytelling, you know, in terms of, like, stuff that was never really available before. In the past, they used to have these screenwriting books, and they weren't written by writers. They were written by writers who didn't succeed as writers, who found a way to, you know, write a book that was compelling. now you have really great writers who are telling you how you can do it. You know, I do want to direct you to the Terry Rossio's, all of his columns. He has a website called wordplayer.com, and the heart of that is the columns, and the columns just go through all these things that talk about storytelling. And John August has also a great website. He's a very successful screenwriter that talks about it, and there's stuff on YouTube, etc. But that's all fine and dandy for theory. And what I'm hearing you say maybe is the matching, you know, learning how to do it actually to be able to work. Yeah. So really, the in addition to all that I'm telling you, the other thing I would say is become an assistant for a writer, like a working writer. It could be a film writer who has a development deal. It could be a TV writer. It could be, you know, any of those things. There's two types of assistants, by the way. There's a writer's assistant that's in the room, okay, taking down notes, and then there's the assistant to the writer that hasn't yet proved themselves. A writer's assistant is actually somebody who the writers have looked at their scripts and said, okay, there's potential here, and we want to bring this person along, you know? The assistant might be some hybrid of that, where maybe they looked at their scripts and they're not as strong, but they like them and they feel like they could do administrative stuff too. But either way, you know, it's all helpful and valuable, you know? Probably my biggest barrier to overcome in this, in my career, was I was an assistant to a producer first versus a writer, and because I didn't really know what I wanted. But really, if I had to do it over again, one of the things I would do is, after being an assistant to a producer, I'd try to go get a job as an assistant to a writer or a director. You know what I mean? To really learn it. So does that make sense? Does that answer your question? And if I'm not answering your questions, really feel free to keep pressing me. It's totally cool. You know, we'll get to the answer somehow. Yeah.
I'm Anita.
Hi.
And I was just, because you're saying you're an assistant to a producer, and I've had this conversation with so many people before. What does a producer do?
It's awesome. You ever see Wag the Dog? The movie Wag the Dog? Dustin Hoffman's character, Wag the Dog.
He's like,
see, we're cooking. This is producing. Nobody knows what producers do, you know? Nobody knows what producers do. Basically, producers make things happen. Producers really fundamentally, at the end of the day, are... There's a few producers who might have a creative skill or two, you know? I don't mean that derogatively. I mean, there's a few producers who might be pretty good at helping the story or whatever. But typically they're not. Typically producers, no matter how they're dressed and what they come in, producers might as well be wearing a suit. Because they're just business guys or women or whoever who are really good at making phone calls and doing everything it takes to try to birth a project. You know? And the amazing producers really are amazing. I mean, I came across this guy, Todd Harris, who reminds me of the producers of old. He made this movie recently called Crooked Arrows, which you may have heard of or seen or whatever. But I connected with him on the front end of that process because I had made my documentary Iroquois Rising, you know. And I saw what he did to make this thing come into... He made it completely independent. Outside the system, the PDF that he had created, all the sponsors that he got, you know, attached to this thing, which weren't giving any money, they were just lending their name. He just piled so many things into this project, whether it was connections with all lacrosse organizations around the world. It was a movie about Native American lacrosse. And all these lacrosse organizations around the world, and Reebok was there, and you know, you got a director attached, you got start, you know, you got all these things, you know, together, you know. And even then, it wasn't going to happen until one person stepped up and wrote a check, you know. And so it took him like an extra year longer than he thought. But he just willed that into existence. So a producer is somebody who is somebody who's got all the great business skills you've ever thought were business skills, you know, negotiator, you know, making calls, but they're super entrepreneurial and they're not afraid to do that all because they just want to get this movie or TV show made. So, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was wondering what it's like to be an art...
You are?
I'm Sola.
Sola?
Yeah. What it's like to be an art director in film or TV.
Sure.
And do you also, if you recommend working as an assistant also for someone who's willing to become...
An art director, yeah.
Yeah, you know, all the crafts as part of it all are really great and they're really necessary. An art director, you know, for those of you who might know, art director is set design, essentially. It's helping to design, you know, what the room might look like that the scene is taking place in, or it's helping to design, basically sets, essentially. Sets both indoors and outdoors and that type of thing. And I'm sorry, what was your question about it?
What it's like to be.
What it's like to be. Well, in all these jobs that are in production, it's all very similar. It's you're spending a lot of time on set. The hours are very, very long. 10, you know, it's not an 8-hour day. It's usually like 8 to 10, could be 12, could be 14, you know, type of thing. Although, you know, you are part of a union. So when you're on a show, whether that's a TV show or a movie or whatever, you're doing well. You're making a good living if you're part of the union or what have you. But it's you're always trying to find work. You know, because you're trying to, if you're not on a show that's like NCIS, it's been on for 10 years, which is great if you can get it. Great saying in Hollywood. It's good work if you can get it, you know. It's great work if you can get it. But that's the rare thing, you know. So, and I do recommend being an assistant. Because that's, you know, because each of those crafts, my sense of it is once you start working, then everybody makes relationships, and that's your network for when you're trying to go from project to project, you know. So, but it's a hard lifestyle in the sense that, you know, when you're working, you just don't have the finite hours that folks have that normal jobs, quote normal jobs, you know, have. So I don't know how that affects family life and all of that. Is that? Let me just try it through. I'll come back to you.
I'm also wondering about like narration. What's your process of having a narrator in your documentaries and things like that?
Process for having, say it again, process for?
Just like getting a narrator, I suppose. Like for instance, for this one, if you're saying students could be involved in it for Swarthmore.
Huh? Yeah, maybe. I mean, sure. I mean, it comes down to the quality level and what you're going for and how it reflects the story and everything. But it's like casting. You know, it's very much similar to casting, you know. So you're just kind of, you're looking at your piece and you're figuring out how does this fit in. Yes.
When you're just starting out, if you're not going to do the Hollywood thing, and especially if you're not stable in one place in that way, mm-hmm. or in one circle or one industry, how do you recommend balancing making a living with making collaborative work with other people?
Can you just say your question one more time? Because I heard a couple of different names in that.
So how do you, basically the question of how do you make work with other people? I mean, say, given, okay, you have an idea, whatever, a script, you have people, and maybe you don't have money, but you have people who are interested in making something with you, whatever.
you balance that with making a living, like making enough to get by? Mm-hmm. How much is enough to get by? Is it like, or you know, do you basically say like the bare minimum, if I can make this much, I can eat soup and that's fine. I love campus, you know? Or is it kind of like, I'm going to try and save up? Like, I mean, is it better to plan even? I mean, just kind of that whole constellation.
And is your thinking, too, in making the project that it's a one-off project, or is it, it's like you do want to do this for a living and as a career and or as a, quote, career, but you want to work in this industry. Is that what's behind it, too?
I guess, I mean, I mean, less tied to wanting to work in an industry versus wanting to, wanting to kind of go from the ground up, say, you know, making things and showing them around, which seems like you're saying that's where the industry is moving toward, the internet, et cetera. So not as much like I need to be producer's assistant, because that's also a way to make money. That's like a job. Mm-hmm. So if not that, then how would you recommend going about it?
Well, the answer is that pretty much any way you can, you know, is the answer, you know, in any way that works for you, you know. You know, for instance, like, so one of the things that's interesting about YouTube right now is that you can make money on YouTube, you know. You can make stuff and get it out there, and if people are going and viewing it, you know, there's a certain threshold where they'll start paying, you know, in YouTube, which is totally different than the world has ever been, you know. I mean, there used to be these barriers, and now they're kind of breaking down these barriers. So there's that element of it. But, you know, the answer really just is kind of... There's so many variables in that question, but the answer is kind of however it works, you know? And I think the challenge more is that not to, if it's something you love to do, if you're doing it from an authentic place, you know, and you're really, it works for you to be making these things, then the other stuff won't really matter. Like, you'll figure out how to get a job or do what you need to do. You know, there's all kinds of different jobs you can do in the world, type of thing, to make a living and keep afloat. And I heard Morgan Spurlock, I don't know if you ever heard him tell his story, you know, but Morgan Spurlock went to film school or whatever, and he did a lot, you know, just working these different jobs and doing these different things, and ended up going into like $250,000 in debt, you know, like on credit cards to try to keep a company afloat that wasn't working. And, you know, he was making videos for Sony or whatever on the side, and he had like 50 grand, and he's like, should I pay the credit card or should I make, and he's like, nah, let's make a movie, you know. and he made Super Size Me, you know, I mean, and it was like, I want to go back to craft. I want to go back to the skills, the storytelling skills, you know, because that's the most important thing. You know, there really is a craft, you know. You don't have to worry, you know, it's talent. People talk about talent, you know. Woody Allen is the first to say that there's like two people in the film business who have talent. Yeah. Everybody else is just doing the best they can, you know? I mean, and I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know? I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, you can learn how to tell a story. You can learn. There's actual ways you can do it, you know? Does it mean you write the best dialogue? No, it doesn't. But it doesn't matter. If you come up with a good idea and you structure it out and you write your thing or whatever, people will, if they like the idea, they'll buy it. You know, if they will, they'll make it, you know.
How do you get from that first sentence to that second sentence? That's the gap I'm wondering.
The hard work, you mean?
No. So you know how to tell a story. You've succeeded. You've kind of built up this idea of what it is to have craft.
Yeah.
Idea B, you sell it. How do you get from having the script
right.
to selling the
right.
script.
Right, 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 right. Just through pure effort. Through making things. Yes, absolutely.
Here's my script.
Absolutely. You know, and people will tell. You know, you'll get feedback. You know, I mean, you can tell that people will tell you. You know what? I really like this, but I don't know. I'm just not ready to buy it. You know, and that's fine. But you can. There's a big difference between that and just nothing. No response, no nothing, pass, you know. I mean, Quentin Tarantino, for instance, you know, is famous for telling his stories about, there's a saying, you can die of encouragement in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's that phase where you're getting better and you know you're getting better and everybody's telling you you're getting better, but nobody's willing to really put their neck on the line for you, you know. And that last part is where you sometimes have to just sort of take the ball and just step over the goal line yourself, you know. There's a lot of stories about that, you know. So it's really through just not stopping, I think. Yeah.
What are the unions like, and should you join them?
The unions?
Yeah.
You know, I can't answer that question. All I can say is that, because I'm not part of a union, but I can say that generally I think the unions have been protective of their members, and they're not perfect, but in a business where it's very easy for people to exploit you and take advantage of you, I think the unions have been very helpful. Good benefits and pension plans and all that, you know. Yeah, before it used to be factory system, you know. You'd go work for the corporation, and so, you know, is my sense. Yes?
You talked about getting into that writer's room and being a writer's assistant. What would be your best advice to get your foot in the door, and are there opportunities for corporation internships? Shadowing, maybe.
Okay, so this is the first one. The best way to do that is, at least know what you're trying to do. You know, that's the first thing. You know, is and keep focused on that. You know, because and write. You got to, you know, if you really want to get in that writer's room, you just got to be writing. You got to be writing script. You got to be learning your craft. So go back to telling stories, learning your craft. You know, that type of thing. And, but I think you have a real advantage when you're coming out of school, you know, because I haven't really seen any 50-year-old writer's assistants, you know, and that's an ageist thing, I think, but I do think that there's an advantage, you know, kind of coming out of school. But I think it's staying focused. I think it's doing the research. There's X number of shows and showrunners out there. It's all out there. It's all available. You just need to, you know, and get out and make relationships in the, you know, in the community and just push it. You know, and just push it. And keep writing, you know, is you know, kind of what it comes down to. The internships do exist, for sure. And you probably have to be a summer internship. It's a little challenging because a lot of shows aren't making their stuff during the summer. You know, they're making their stuff during the school year. So this is where the location here is not helpful on the internship front. You know, there was an intern at the unit, I remember, and I think that person went to school at Loyola, Marymount. It might have been from Middlebury, which is Sean Ryan's college school. So if you get an internship, you might have to do it. I don't know how that works during the school year, you know. So is that answering your question? Yeah. What else? Yeah.
In terms of, like, just keep writing. Are there things you might want to consider writing or not writing? You know, you have a limited amount of time. Are there certain types of stories that, or kinds of content that tend to be more normal? Is there stuff, you know, that's like you'll show this to someone and, you know, you've written your, you know, in your heart, and it's just not, you know, it's not what, you know, it's like, okay, this is good, but no.
Basically. Right.
You know,
right.
Is there ways to focus that effort?
Yeah.
In terms of context.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question. These days, I would think in terms of writing stuff, you can get made. And when I say get made, like, you know, if you haven't made anything, you can actually, you know, make with friends. You can actually shoot, you know, together. Because, you know, the intrinsic nature of your question is challenging because you're automatically giving power to some outside entity, you know, by saying that. And it's like, well, let me just not accept your assumption here and say to you that I would write stuff that you can make, either that you can make on stage or that you can shoot, and think in those terms, you know, because that gives you limitations. The best thing you can have when you're writing is to have limitations, you know. One of the things I feel like they don't tell people enough when people have this question about what to write is a lot of people write stuff that you can't shoot. They don't. Well, first of all, they write it and they don't even think about shooting it. You know, they just think, oh, is, you know, and it's sure it's nice, it's a great story, but if it's a $150 million film, forget it. Forget it. You know, I mean, people might like it, but they just, you know, I mean, look, it could be the lottery ticket, but it's a lottery game on that front, you know? So in your scenario, or in this scenario that's been created, I would just say write things you can make. There's plenty of tools available to do that. And that would be the content. And that way, you don't have to worry about what other people are saying. You're learning. I mean, that's the other thing, is I would trust in your own instincts. You know, as you're making things, you're going to make them and show them. You know, the best thing you can do is make things and show them, you know? Yeah, people may hate it, they may like it, you may love it, that's cool. Keep making, you know, do what you love, you know? And at some point, you'll just decide, well, if you're really just making things and they just connect with you and nobody else, you'll say, you know, I really enjoy doing this, but I'm the only one who likes it. You know what I mean? So you either change and you'll do something else, you know, or whatever. So does that make sense? Is that helpful?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the reason I asked the question is just because you're like, you know, in terms of something like becoming a writer, you show scripts to people. So it does involve some kind of interaction with some outside.
Right.
Even, you know, even as much as you might not like that part.
Right. So. So in that instance, that's a very specific medium. So a writer's assistant TV is you're writing TV. Thanks. Yeah. So you're writing TV. You're writing TV stuff. You know. So, so that there you're already limited. You know, you're either writing specs for shows or you're writing a pilot. You know. So that's that limitation there.
Is there something that you wish you knew before you went in?
Yes.
That you haven't said already.
Yes, there is. Before I went in, you mean got involved in creating things in the entertainment industry? Yeah, I really wish I knew that I didn't have to reinvent the wheel myself. You know, I really wish I just had no, I had no advice or, thanks. I had no, I'd never come across anybody telling me that really, how am I going to say this? It always sounds terrible when I say it, but it's actually really true. There's a saying, amateurs borrow, professionals steal. You know, and really, I mean, somebody said, look, an experienced writer-producer said, you know, the best thing you can do if you're starting out as a writer is take a show that you like, take an episode of a show that you like, and just rewrite that episode. Write that episode. But when you write that episode, write it as you would write that episode. You know, not as they did it. You know? And I was like, absolutely, because the truth is, because what is somebody going to read? Somebody's going to read this, and they're either going to go, first of all, nobody watches everything. So they're going to go, oh, yeah, that aired last week, you know? They'll be like, okay, but it'll have your twist. It'll have your spin on it, you know? But it's the courage to do that, you know? That, like, I always thought, that's plagiarism. What is that, you know? But that's what I wish I would have.